Hello, thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Rylene Ng, California. And today I'll be presenting results from an analysis looking at the sexual networks of early syphilis cases in the San Francisco Bay Area region. Early syphilis cases in California have been increasing steadily since 2000, predominantly among males, specifically MSM. Since 2012, we've also been seeing some concerning increases in the number of female cases and consequently congenital syphilis cases as well. These are early syphilis cases by sexual orientation in the Bay Area and San Francisco regions from 2006 to 2015. In the Bay Area, we see MSM largely contributing to the increase in that region. And in San Francisco, we have MSM and males with unknown gender or sex partner that are contributing to the overall increase and morbidity in that region. So in 2014, at this very conference, colleagues from the San Francisco Department of Public Health presented results from a large sexual network that was identified using routine syphilis and HIV partner services data. The mega network, as they coined it, consisted of 435 persons who were more likely to be HIV positive and repeat infections compared to persons outside of that network. And their conclusions were that a network approach could potentially help DIS prioritize efforts by identifying more connections that could be detected through case-by-case review. And so there was some interest in saying, well, let's look at the networks beyond the county border lines, let's look across counties and see if there's a case to be made for a more regional approach to syphilis control. So in collaboration with SF, we decided to put it all together and look at the sexual networks of early syphilis cases diagnosed 2008 to 2014 in the entire San Francisco Bay Area region, which includes San Francisco, plus the nine other counties that you see there, which are collectively referred to as the California Project Area or the CPA jurisdictions. So to do this, we pulled data from three different surveillance data sets. The first was the CPA legacy system. It was a DOS-based system in effect until 2013. Then CalReady, which is California's web-based disease reporting system, was implemented for syphilis in 2013. And ISHTAR, which is San Francisco's homegrown STD patient registry, it contains STD screening and surveillance data. Important to note here, San Francisco, as well as Los Angeles, maintain separate databases, separate surveillance systems from the state. All other 59 jurisdictions participate in CalReady. But within CalReady, the 59 jurisdictions can only see their own data. So if we ever report a case in San Diego who has a history of syphilis infection and treatment in, say, Napa, the two counties can't see each other's information. So to put everything together, we applied a probabilistic matching algorithm similar to the one Nicole described earlier. We looked at name, date of birth, gender, race, ethnicity, and county. We identified unique persons. Once we did that, we assigned a unique person ID to all an individual's associated records, creating a person-based data set that we could use to generate the network. Some terminology really quickly moving forward. Nodes refers to unique persons in the network, so in our case, infected cases and partners. Also, the color of the nodes you'll see in the diagrams later refers to the local health jurisdiction of residence. Edges refers to relationships between nodes, and component refers to a group of nodes that are all connected to each other. So think of it like a network. So after matching, we identified just over 12,000 unique nodes, 68% of which had at least one partnership detected. So they were part of a discernible network. Of those individuals, 47% resided in San Francisco, 31% resided in a CPA jurisdiction, 2% resided in multiple jurisdictions during that time frame, 3% resided in other areas in California, 2% were outside of California, and 15% were named by a San Francisco case, but we ultimately didn't have residency information. So again, what were the three questions we looked at? The first one, what type of sexual network can an individual local health jurisdiction see? So remember, they only have access. They can only see what is in their county. The second was, what happens if you look at the networks for the CPA jurisdictions together? So as a state employee, this is what I can see. And then what type of networks emerge when you incorporate San Francisco's data? So we'll start with the individual jurisdiction. So we'll choose Contra Costa. If I'm a Contra Costa Health Department employee, this is what I can see when I look at my networks. First of all, only 20% of cases had partners named. So that's not the highest estimate. But what we had available, there were 90 components that we could identify, the overwhelming majority of which were dyads and triads, so networks of 2 to 3 persons each. The largest component was 33 nodes. 37% of the components we could identify had at least one interjurisdictional partnership. Looking instead at Alameda, we see a higher proportion of cases that named partners, so we see more components. Overall, we see larger components, even though the largest one was only 23 nodes. But again, 40% of the components we could identify had at least one interjurisdictional partnership, and we see this pattern repeat in all 9 of the counties in the CPA Bay Area. So if we look at the entire CPA Bay Area jurisdictions, we see a lot of small disconnected networks, but we see a high proportion of networks in each of those jurisdictions that had partnerships between persons who lived in different jurisdictions. So then what happens if we incorporate San Francisco? Everybody take a breath. So compared to the limited connectivity that we saw with just the CPA data alone, incorporating San Francisco results in a very large network. You see here over 3,800 nodes, over 4,500 partnerships. The majority of this network is CPA in San Francisco. 41% of the partnerships in that network were interjurisdictional. But it's hard to see what's happening in something quite so complex. So let's zoom in a little bit. So now we're inside the network, and we said, give me everybody who lives in Alameda, and take me out 1 degree. So we're all familiar with 6 degrees of separation. Take me out 1 degree, my immediate partner. What we find is that the largest component that comes out of that is 147 nodes for Alameda. If you remember, looking at Alameda's data alone, the largest component we could find was 23 nodes. Excuse me. So you start to see the impact of putting all of these data together. So here, if we drill it down even further, we start with an Alameda case in blue, who named San Francisco cases in red. San Francisco case names other San Francisco cases, but Alameda can't see this because we don't share our data that way. The systems we have don't talk to each other. Even though the network ultimately comes back to Alameda, from Alameda's perspective, these two individuals are completely separate incidents, completely different networks, even though they're only a few steps away from each other. So then if we look at the whole colorful network again, we can see and get a sense of how syphilis is moving in and out of different jurisdictions within just a few steps. And even though the majority of persons named 1, 2, 3 partners each, the networks are branching together in a way that's moving syphilis through the entire region. If we take that same network with 1 degree, we go out one more step. This is just 2 degrees out. You start to see the impact of San Francisco's data. The nodes have gone up fourfold, and the number of partnerships has gone up fivefold. It's just 2 degrees out. So, key findings, there is low connectivity in the CPA Bay Area data alone. 1/3 of the partnerships that were interjurisdictional, 37% of the components we could identify had at least one interjurisdictional partnership. Including San Francisco's data, revealed regional connection we didn't see otherwise. The majority of small networks joined together to form one very large network, and 41% of partnerships in that network were interjurisdictional. Limitations, of course, incomplete network ascertainment due to cases not being interviewed, cases not naming partners, under overmatching from our algorithm, and the inability to simply link cases and partners together in CalReady results in a lack of generalizability to the larger at-risk population. So aggregating data over 6 years overestimates the connectivity sort of in a real-time sense, and it makes it difficult to analyze node attributes that can change over time, HIV status, for example. But in conclusion, visualizing networks across counties reveals otherwise unseen regional connections. The high proportion of interjurisdictional partnership warrants more regional syphilis control efforts, or at least a very open dialogue, because STD transmission does not adhere to our county borderlines, even though our programs and our resources are allocated that way. I think it's a unique time to explore the potential of new technologies available that we have in STD surveillance and case management systems that are increasingly used by different programs to potentially maybe generate networks in real time that allow DIS to identify high-risk persons, influential persons in a network, groups of people to prioritize follow-up. Related to that, understanding the position and profile of nodes may help DIS target follow-up for cases most likely to be involved in ongoing transmission, bridges between networks, for example, repeat infections, where are people meeting their partners, and also the position of HIV-positive persons in a network relative to others with HIV status, negative or HIV-negative or unknown status, and think about what's the impact of PrEP in these different networks. And lastly, I'll say if syphilis is increasing in your county or your project area, what might a network approach reveal about your connection to surrounding areas? What are the opportunities that might emerge to collaborate and leverage our very limited resources, but I think a very deep well of knowledge, to slow the spread of syphilis? I would like to acknowledge my network at the California SD Control Ranch, UC Berkeley. This was part of my dissertation, colleagues at the CDC, and San Francisco, of course. And I'll take questions.
Thank you. Questions? Okay, questions and shameless plugs.
Hi, Janet Arno from Indianapolis. Did you use your network to identify maybe core transmitters and use sort of measures of centrality to be able to identify them and target them?
Great question. I will make the disclaimer that I do not claim to be a network expert by any means, but that was something that I was interested in. We haven't looked at it that way because there were a lot of challenges with getting the data together and figuring out how to code everything across 6 years. The intention was actually to look at year by year to get a more real-time sense. The data, as you can see, were so limited for the CPA that we couldn't really get at centrality for each of these individual jurisdictions. I think moving forward, that's something that I'd like to do and incorporate more of the risk behaviors on top of the centrality, to get a sense of where are these core transmitters, see if we can get the data out of what we have.
Pretty awesome, as is.
Thank you.
Hi, that was great. I'm Mari Gezerowitz from Wisconsin, and we have a poster that does some small fraction of the cool work that you've done. It's WP78, but there are three posters that are going to be, that Dr. William Miller is going to talk about at 6 p.m. this evening, and it's one of them, and it's because there's a DIS piece. So if people are interested in DIS and networks, we can talk more about that.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Arturo Meretu from Las Vegas, Nevada. We have been trying to play with sexual networks for the past couple of years, and what we have been noticing is we are lacking that big cluster that you have showed when you added San Francisco, and from year to year, it's getting spread out, and you can't connect cases, and one of it is being, I think, anonymous contacts, and for that, we recently started the IPS program, and we don't know how well it's going to work, but we started it. But at the end, you recommended that health districts should, or health departments, local jurisdictions should start using this to identify high-risk persons for enhanced counseling, advanced counseling? Is that what it is for? And then if so, how can you incorporate that to your local current day-to-day activity, and who's going to run that analysis to find that high-degree node or high-risk person? I don't know how feasible that would be, because we try to implement social network strategy. That's what's recommended by CDC. And one of the question was recruiting people from the testing sites, but those people might not be the key people in connecting this high risk nodes.
Right, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I will say that it's kind of the million-dollar elephant in the room, I guess. The fact that 60%, I mean, we're talking 40% of the cases had network information that we could use, had named partners. That 60% of our cases we have no network information on. They, depending on what type of networks they're engaged in, this could literally change the story that you see here. So there's definitely challenges, and I can't say that I really know the answer to the question of how would you do a network-based for partner services approach. What exactly would that look like? I think what this offers is a different way to look at the data. If we have the luxury of having, if we have the data in the first place, I think that what has happened is we look at our numbers, our partner services outcomes in aggregate a lot, and it doesn't necessarily get at what's happening out in the communities. And I think it offers this opportunity to bridge a gap between EPI and field staff and program, and we can take this network and pull out a lot of that rich information from our DIS who know about these networks, who understand these communities. We say, here's the network that we could glean from the data. Can you help us fill in these gaps and start there? And maybe then sort of depending on what's happening in your local programs, in your surrounding regions, maybe then opportunities will emerge for how to use those data to drive program. In terms of how to respond to, you know, if we were to say identify individuals at risk, again, I couldn't say that I know exactly how that would look yet, but I think that this offers an opportunity to open that dialogue about what kind of resources do we have available. How can we pull our resources together and target them in a way that might have a bigger impact than maybe just partner services as it is right now? Again, million-dollar elephant.
Dr. Manu Hansen, London. I was wondering, of the 40% who are contactable contacts, how many of those were actually seen and tested and verified? And you started off talking about transmission into women and congenital syphilis. Have you got any data from your diagrams related to transmission from men to women?
I'll answer the second question first because it's like in my soul. We have the congenital syphilis outbreak happening in Central Valley, California. We haven't had the chance to look at those networks yet. I think that they would look very different and also the same because the population we're dealing with, I think, would be a lot of anonymous partners. There's a lot of meth use, a lot of commercial sex work. We haven't had the opportunity to look at that, but it is on my number 1, 2, 3 list of things that I would love to take the time to do. The first question about treatment, testing and treatment of partners, I don't remember the number off the top of my head. It's about, if you look at all of the partners that were notified, proportion of those tested, examined about 80%, I want to say, then it goes down from there. So I want to say about 30% maybe tested and treated at the end. We have a lot that are unable to locate. And over time, because we're looking at 6 years worth of data, it has gone down over time. If you were to look at more recent data, it's definitely lower than it used to be.
In terms of new technology, what are you thinking of?
Oh, well, initially, I'll say when I started this process, I had no idea sort of what capabilities were out there. Once I sort of teamed up with my colleague in San Francisco, I realized that the way he approached it was actually sort of an SQL code, which is really sort of the backbone of what I've learned of CalReady, for example. I don't know about Maven or some of these other systems. But in the background of our system, it's a Microsoft SQL server. And so how hard might it be to take the code, for example, that my colleague in San Francisco has built and incorporate it in to be able to draw a network diagram? It doesn't seem necessarily like too far-fetched of a possibility, but I've been known to be optimistic.
And I'm afraid this will have to be our last question because we're almost out of time. But we could.
he is the guy.
He is. This is the man who wrote that program.
Yes, I am Bob Kuhn from San Francisco, which is sometimes part of California.
And since you offered $1 million, I'm willing to show it to you for $1 million. I'll just add, actually, in the 2 years since the talk I did here, Rylene has obviously added a lot of value to it. It's a great work you've done. We have been trying to build this, sort of make a practical application for this, sort of a personal network for our cases, and we're working on it, we're getting it off the ground, but the idea is that you could just type somebody's name in and it would show you all of the connections that they have. And maybe we'd call them, maybe they're not sex partners, but maybe we call them up and say, hey, your name came up, it was attached to a previous investigation for somebody that has syphilis again, maybe you need to get retested. And I'm hoping in 2 years, maybe I'll be able to do a presentation.
Thank you, Bob.
Well, thank you all of our wonderful presenters.